Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This is Marcus Wheaton, and this is Lost to Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, citizens of the universe, this is Roster Watch. My name is Alex Dunlap. I'm joined by Cody Carpentier. And Cody, the Bengals, they've locked in their passing game. You got Joe Burrow, you got T. Higgins, you got Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins both getting not twin deals, but certainly getting deals, making them the highest at wide receiver one and the highest at wide receiver two. What are you thinking?
Is this, first off, the thought has to be, is this a colossal mistake? That's my biggest question, because we know from a team building perspective, putting this much money into these positions, right? Paying two receivers at the top of the game right now. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase gets $40.5 million per year. Higgins is over 30. Combined, it's 4 years. 276, which I believe is more. I know it's over 4 years, but 276 is more than the 1 year salary cap. So imagine over a course of 4 years, they're getting one entire year's worth of salary cap. These two guys are kind of a wild thought. Then you also have Joe Burrow in there with his mega contract. It feels cool to say, like, oh yeah, we got two of the highest paid receivers. We got a quarterback in his prime, but there's one problem. If you ain't got a defense, you ain't going to win a championship.
Okay, so a couple things I find whenever I first heard about this. One, there's just a – I think, first of all, Cincinnati Bengals fans have the right to be happy about this and to celebrate this.
Yeah.
And so we're not coming here to dog on the Bengals or say, well, they did this wrong or this wrong. Or like, we're not here to rain on any parade. You guys have your sort of your triplets or whatever you're going to call it. You got them locked up, and it's going to be an awesome, passing game if they can keep the quarterback upright. Looking at the offensive line, it's not. We'll talk about that in a minute. The first thing I thought was, dude, they could have gotten T. Higgins. They could have got this done with T. Higgins last year when T. Higgins was basically saying he was turtling up and saying, dude, all I want is like Michael Pittman money. He said, I want one of these contracts like Michael Pittman got. I'm not trying to shoot the moon here. Well, I know that Ja'Marr's going to have to get paid. That's what his agent was saying.
Chase wanted to get paid last year too.
They could have got this done for $18 million. I think Pittman's making like 18 mil, and that was only a 3-year deal. And the Colts can get out of Pittman's deal actually after the 2022. Is that after 2025 that they can get out of it? I think it is, because
it ends after 26. So they probably can get out of it after this year.
Yeah. So with Pittman,
it was a 3-year deal in 2024.
Yeah, and I believe let me pull it up, because I believe his cap hit in 2026 that's the year that they can get out of it, that they probably will get out of it. And I think this cap hit in 2026 is basically what the cap hit's going to be for T. Higgins every single year.
spot track.
That's where they brutally failed, though, is that they could have paid Higgins a year ago, paid him the Pittman money, and Chase just needed to be the highest paid receiver. He could have gotten, you know, the Justin Jefferson deal last fall. That's $20 million they missed out on because they kicked the can. All of a sudden, Myles Garrett resets the highest non-paid quarterback thing. And guess what the deal ended up being? $500,000 more. It's just dumb.
Yeah. So it's the whole Anwar Richardson saying from the Florida athletic director about if they're Jeremy Foley that I think about a lot, where it's like, if you're going to do something, if it's inevitable that you're going to do something, you should just do it immediately. Yeah. Like I think it was like, if it's always been inevitable that you're going to have these two guys come back, you should have done it immediately. I'm not sure it was always inevitable with the T. Higgins thing. I think it probably took some real soul searching from them after the franchise tag and all the rest of it to say like, oh, well, actually we're going to keep moving on with this in good faith as far as T. Higgins and keeping him together with Ja'Marr Chase. And for fantasy, I mean, it's fine. I've heard people say like, oh, well, you know, now they had thought that an eventual divorce would come with T. Higgins from the Bengals, and particularly in the dynasty leagues, you know, people think that maybe down the road, Ja'Marr Chase has maybe lost a little bit of value long-term. And to that, I just say, dude, he's done what he's done. He's outscored in PPR, you know, last year, every other wide receiver by over 100 fantasy points or something. And he did that with T. Higgins. It's like, I mean, who knows? Maybe T. Higgins being there actually kind of helps, you know. I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, you brought up dynasty. I was going to say, would you rather have Drake London or T. Higgins?
I think Drake London.
Garrett Wilson or T. Higgins?
Well,
that's where I'm at right now in dynasty. That's about where we have these guys in the conversation. Higgins is 26, Wilson's 25, London's 24.
I mean, I like Garrett. If I was starting in my own NFL team, I think I would choose Garrett Wilson. If we're talking about dynasty, it starts getting hard, man. It starts getting hard right about there. The other thing that I had to do a bunch of training with our friend Grok on this earlier, but I finally got him up to date with some of these new signings and some of the new things that have happened around the league. And, had him rank the combined quarterback and top two wide receivers as far as their cap hit percentage.
Ooh, okay, this will be interesting.
Okay, so the Cincinnati Bengals obviously are now in first place as far as this is concerned. 2025, 43.95% of their cap is going to these three players. Out of curiosity, who do you think the top three are? Bengals, who else? Hate to put you on the spot.
Can you rephrase the question?
Okay, so if you take a percentage of the 2025 NFL salary cap, right, and you say and that percentage is made up of the quarterback and the two highest paid wide receivers, the Cincinnati Bengals now lead this thing with like 43.95% of their cap dedicated to these guys.
And who's the next two? That's the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Miami.
Close. They're fourth. 35%. 35.8.
Okay.
One of them should be reasonably obvious. The
Philadelphia.
Yeah. Philly's number two, 38.63.
And?
The third isn't.
Third's not obvious?
Yeah. And the third might not exactly be right because I'm not sure. I'm not technically – let me just make sure.
I feel like I think it could be it's not the Rams. I'm empty here. It's not like Cleveland or some crap, is it, with Deshaun Watson?
Cleveland is up there pretty high.
That's because of Deshaun, right? I was thinking it was like their receiving core though. It's empty now with Cooper gone.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who the other team. Who's the other team?
Well, if it was it said the Dallas Cowboys because it was taking Brandon. It was assuming Brandon Cooks would be back and saying that he would extend at the same number of the same $10 million as last year, which I don't think, is exactly right. So I think if we were just to take away that
Houston,
one,
what about Houston? Stroud hasn't got a contract yet, has he?
No, it says for Houston,
because Christian Kirk's deal.
Yeah, I hadn't factored in Christian Kirk with that one. Houston, it still has the Houston Texans at 22nd in the league as far as spending, 18.08%. That is due to Stroud is at $9 million. Nico Collins is at $18 million, and then Christian Kirk was at.
It's like eight. Is he at 18?
Let me just see. Hold on. No, because at first it was giving me Tank Dell, and I had to tell him that they traded for Christian Kirk. So with the updated data here, it was.
Oh, you know who's probably close? Baker. Baker and Godwin and Evans probably are like sixth on that list.
Okay, so it has him. So this is after the Christian Kirk. I don't have Christian Kirk's exact numbers pulled up, but after him pulling Christian Kirk stuff from SpotTrack, they are still ranked only 22nd because of CJ Stroud's contract.
Is Tampa like number 5 or 6 behind Miami?
Tampa's at 8. It goes Cincinnati, Philly. Dallas is wrong. Miami, Cleveland, Detroit, Buffalo, Tampa Bay at 8. Jacksonville at 9, Kansas City is only at 10, and that's after adding in the Marquise Brown stuff. Los Angeles, after bringing in Devontae Adams, is sitting at 23.57. But it's wild that like even half of what other teams are paying these three positions, the quarterback and the top two wide receivers, it's like only 13 teams in the league are paying more than half of what the Bengals are playing for that. And so it just, it brings the other thing up. It's like, how good do you really think is the first thing I thought is like, well, there was the report, I think this morning, and it might've been Jordan Schultz, or I forgot who, wasn't it Jordan Schultz who had this story?
Yeah. Neither of the other guys shared it for a little bit.
And he was saying that, you know, in making this move, they're really like, the plan organizationally is like, we really need to build around some, you know, we need to do a good job with building around some players on rookie contracts and drafting well and stuff. And it got me thinking, I'm like, well, who have they really drafted lately that you look at them and you say, well, that's a good guy to build around. I mean, I think about Chase Brown. Where are you right now on Amarius Mims?
Because, well, he was a project to begin with. I think he was hurt last year, though.
Yeah.
And he had 9 starts in college at Georgia, and then that was the big thing. Was like, we had 9 starts. Yeah, but he was at Georgia every day practicing against the Georgia guys. That was his big sell point that Kirby made last year. And he was picked, 18th overall? I think he missed like a good – memory could precede me, but I think he missed a good portion of last year, if not most of it.
All right. So, I mean, besides
– I think you have to look at that as like a – Amarius Mims, you have to look at him and you have to stretch that as far as you can and make him your starter. You just have to at this stage.
They have Amarius Mims who projects. Okay. Amarius Mims, it looks like. Yeah, he had an ankle injury. He had a hand.
Does it show how many games he played? It had to be like 10.
I don't have it pulled up on PFF or anything right now. I'm just kind of looking at, like, I just Googled Amarius Mims injury, you know, and it's like a couple of these things popped up. He clearly missed some time. There's a YouTube video here saying Amarius Mims out several weeks with injury, calls it a lesson, blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know the exact nature of it. It says like by the time of December 27th, he was playing, but he was playing through the injury, having to tough it out to protect Joe Burrow, et cetera, et cetera. So you're right in generally remembering that he was banged up through last season, but I don't know the exact number of games missed.
Nonetheless, the answer to your question, though, is like those are the type of guys, him, Chase Brown. I mean, they're going to
have – Who else?
you know, draft a running back in this class. I mean, you have to believe that.
Has Joseph Osai by now been a hit? I mean, I can't really say so as much as I would love to.
I think he's in line to start now that they let Hendrickson walk. Hendrickson, right?
Well, there's still discussion about what's going to happen with Hendrickson.
Yeah. He's still on the roster, right? Yeah. Who's the one that's not on the roster? Hubbard. I get those two guys mixed up literally every day. Hubbard's not on the team. So that opened the door for Joseph Osai. So it's Osai and that's Hendrickson. I think they drafted Miles Murphy from Clemson, who I like, the defensive tackle. I think they drafted like a dude from Michigan last year, D tackle. Back end though, like I think they spent a lot of draft capital on the last 3 years. Yeah. Remember they drafted Dax Hill.
Last year the D tackle was that McKinley Jackson?
No, that's from Texas A&M. He's from Texas A&M. Let me look.
That was the third rounder from last.
Chris Jenkins.
Chris Jenkins Jr. Yep. Jenkins. Okay. Oh, I mean, so this defense. Do you think it's the defense for the Bengals, or do you think it's the offensive line? Like, how are they going to attack this draft now? If they're telling us that they're trying to add dudes who are going to be on these cheaper contracts just to be able to manage this situation, just pay, you know, this top heavy situation with these top three dudes. I believe that in the first three rounds, they just have their regular old picks. Yeah. So they pick at 17, they pick at 49, they pick at 81. In round four, they just have their picks are just their picks. They don't have a seventh rounder, but they just have all of their picks rounds one through six. They have six picks in this draft.
Not a lot, not enough. No, I mean, for a team like this, with the money expended in the direction they have, the thing is they drafted D tackles last year, which from a philosophy standpoint, round two and round three, this would have been the year I wanted to draft defensive tackles in round two and three. I think the defensive line room overall is workable. Logan Wilson's a top linebacker. Jermaine Pratt's a good enough number two. They spent enough draft capital on the back end. Dax Hill, DJ Turner, speed, a burner from Michigan. Geno Stone came over from free agency. Cam Taylor Britt's respectable. The defense is like the names and the talent's fine. But man, they gave up like 32 points a game last year. And the offensive line's always been like the big question with Cincinnati, right? It's like, can you protect Burrow? Orlando Brown.
My thing is if you've made this big an investment in this in the passing game, you got to keep him upright.
100%.
It's like, otherwise, what are you even doing? So it's like you almost got to protect that.
You got to play like last dude with the ball. Like Joe Burrow has to be the last dude touching the ball every game, and you have to protect him so we can get the ball down the field. Like that's the MO of how they're going to play right now until they can get this defense like until they can nail a draft or two in a row. And they're acting like the window's open, which the window's open. It's always, I mean, with a quarterback like Burrow, the Super Bowl window's always open. And it just seems like such a razor tight, like line you have to stay on building a team the way that they're building this. Like if I'm the GM, I'm not paying T. Higgins, period. Dude. Like there's just not a number unless I do it last year and I can get him at that Pittman number somewhere around the 18, 20, 22, maybe. Like I'm just not giving him this when I have the number one receiver in football or number two receiver in football, however you want to look at him and Jefferson.
Hey, they must hate Jermaine Burton, man. Like they,
what did he say at the combine? Basically like, you know, we love Jermaine, but Jermaine has to make his decisions and get himself ready to play football. Like the guys that were goo goo gaga was Yossi Vosh and Charlie Jones.
We love him, but we hate him. It's like,
yeah, it's like, you know, he's gonna, you know, classic. But that's the I think from a philosophy standpoint, you just have to spend that money, that T. Higgins money, on Hendrickson. You have to spend it on the guy that led the football in sacks last year. Like, you have to have something on defense as a a leader. You paid Burrow. You paid your receiver. All right. Now let's wait. Maybe we draft a receiver in this class. Maybe we play Yosavash. We play Jones. We try to find something here. And you know what? If it doesn't work the first 4 weeks, there's this thing called the trade deadline. And then you have next year's draft picks that you can move for a receiver at the deadline. You know, if the Rams start out flat and Devontae all of a sudden becomes available, stuff like this, right? That you never foresee coming, but comes available week 4, 5, 6, 7. And that would be my train of thought at the receiver position rather than just being like, yeah, let's go pay T. Higgins, where it's like you're paying him. Whose contract is he behind? He's right now, he's number 7 overall in contract value at wide receiver, squished between Brandon Ayuk and DJ Moore. Ayuk, number 1 on his team. DJ Moore, number 1 on his team, right? He's the 7th highest paid in overall contract value overall at wide receiver. It's literally Chase, Jefferson, Lamb, duh, Metcalf, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins. And I'm not discrediting T. Higgins in any way, shape, or form. He could probably walk out of the market tomorrow and get paid that same exact contract, if not the 120 that Brandon Ayuk got, because he'd be the number 1 for whatever team he'd go to, whether it's, you know, the Titans or the Panthers, whatever it is, he would have gotten that 120. I just, from a team building standpoint, still cannot and will not be able to wrap my head around it because, again, you got to play defense, man. That's a lot of money that you can throw at your edge rusher and trying to get that fourth quarter pass rush to win you those games or to get you another a cornerback or something on defense that can lead you. And so everything doesn't become so tight and so compressed in the draft when you only have 6 picks.
Do you think Will Johnson from Michigan is going to slide in this draft, or will the draft be a flat circle? And when we come back, somebody's going to draft him
early. I kind of feel,
This is going to come back to the Bengals, but I want to make sure that my question even makes sense. Is there a chance that Will Johnson could be there at 17?
You know, I think that there is, strictly because of the non-testing thing, but I think that the flat circle, which I talked about like a month ago on my Draft Rankings morning show, was just that, like, there's guys like Will Johnson, Kelvin Banks, who's the other one in the positive regression, Malachi Starks, the safety slash corner from Georgia, names, and Luther Burden, Emeka Egbuka. These names have been like going backwards. And then you've seen names like, and this is no disrespect to Jahdae Barron, but Jahdae Barron's come like flying up, right? Mike Green has come flying up. Shamar Stewart flying up. And, you know, some of those names will stick and some of those will go up that high. But like I said, like the Kelvin Banks, the Malachi Starks, the Will Johnson, I would buy all the dip on those guys. I don't think those guys are going to fall nearly as far as the consensus does.
Okay. So let's just say that Will Johnson was available at 17. Okay.
Which is probably a little tight, but I get it.
But for the sake of just,
This
is more of a conceptual thing. Okay, so, and it doesn't even have to be him. It's like, if you look at what the Bengals have done, they've been drafting, like, the last, say, 2020.
They've been drafting Wolverines after Wolverines after Wolverines.
Yeah, but they've also been trying to take these DBs in the third and fourth rounds and stuff the last 2 years. And so, If that's a part of their defense that they feel like needs shoring up, and it feels like, listening to, you know, some of the Cincinnati people, that they do, it's like, are you going to ever make the investment in it, right? And so if that is a position of a position where you want to get a young cornerstone piece that's at a premier position, now we've seen a position where the salary has been completely reset by our boy Dave Mulgeta once again with Derek Stingley Jr. down in Houston earlier this morning. Premier position, outside corner, Will Johnson, at the beginning of the season, was thought about the cinch cornerback 1 in this class. If somebody like that falls, right, could you even consider like a Gray Zabel or somebody like that over that kind of player, just because of what we talked about earlier? Yeah, and so we should say, for the strictly fantasy audience, Will Johnson's a cornerback out of Michigan that people thought coming into this season was the lock to be the cornerback 1. He was a little bit injured through this year. Michigan wasn't as good as everybody thought. Yada, yada, yada. His stock slipped a little bit, okay? When we say that the draft's a flat circle, though, what Cody and I mean by that is like the stuff you think at the very beginning of draft season usually comes right back around to the end, and it's kind of the same. It's probably going to be like that with Shedeur Sanders.
Yep.
Right. It's like you're hearing all this stuff about him now. Like, you know, teams don't like him. There's this giant chasm between him and Cam Ward. He could fall a lot farther than you would thought, and he could, right? Or he could just be – he could go in the top five and just be the second quarterback taken like everybody thought all along, which is probably going to happen. If the draft is a flat circle with Will Johnson, he won't be available there at 17. But if he was, what would you do? Would you take one of these, you know – would you take a guy like Zabel, who you know is just going to be a lock to be an instant starter for you at guard, and just say like, man, we can start to maybe build it. We can start getting more out of Amarius Mims. We got a great Zabel or that type of player. You can insert a player that you maybe like more that you think is going to go there. Like I've always thought Zabel's probably going to go around 20. So that's the guy that I kind of thought of, but it could be anybody outside of – it could be any of these. It could be the Ohio State kid, Simmons. He might fall. Do you think he'll fall? He's coming off ACL.
I don't know. I'm kind of in the air with the Simmons situation. I think if he was healthy, he would have been a little bit higher, and I think that there'll be some teams that overlook that if the medicals came back good, they'll still draft him as high. So
let's just say Zabel, Simmons, this type of player, a dude that you could figure could be a rock for you on the offensive line, right? Or would you address defense? Because I would say the fact that you've done this, I would say add strength to strength and say like we giving Burrow the weapons. Like we're obviously going to run through this passing game. We need to make sure he's upright. Just get the offensive line right.
Yeah, I get it. I think I would probably bypass the corner thing. I like Will Johnson, but I think I might bypass that in favor of the trenches just because of the trench depth of this class. I think Zabel gives you that five tool ability where like we've seen year after year, one thing that drags the Bengals down is the injuries on the offensive line. And Orlando Brown, I know he's been in the league for a decade and he's a massive human being. And Amarius Mims is a second year guy that's been banged up and he's rather unproven, and Cody Ford's been in for a decade. He's playing right guard, and it's like Zabel's a guy that can play all five if you need him to, right? He can move around and do different things. So I think Zabel's a good call there. I also have like the question, and they've had Hendrickson and Hubbard the last couple of years. That's been their duo, and now Hubbard's gone, and they're trying to get Hendrickson back. Why in a class like this, if you see like this is what I did in the last mock, and this is the only reason I'm bringing it up, because I think both the guys you brought to the table are very good players and fit exactly what we're talking about here from a roster building standpoint. But what about like a Shamar Stewart, some type of like, you know, alien edge rusher that you can put on the opposite side of Hendrickson for a year and potentially he can become the thing that allows you to move on from Hendrickson, right? And continue to build that defense and not have to pay another big contract. Or I know they're trying to, but I don't think they're going to be able to pay him, but kind of at a more high value position where they've spent a lot of capital in the draft on corners the last couple of years. And they drafted an offensive lineman last year. And I don't think their offensive line is in as bad a shape where you kind of have to take that Zabel pick. Whereas like, I think edge, I know Joseph Osai is there and Hendrickson's there. I think that's a little more volatile though, that edge room.
Yeah. It's a premier position. It's along the lines. I just don't like, if I were that owner, I'd just be like, dude, make sure the offensive line's good. We make these giant investment in this 100%. One part of the scheme. So 100%. We'll see what they do. I can see I don't think Shamar Stewart falls to 17 anyway.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. Right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, just what we're talking about, just draft order and stuff like that. Can we just talk about, before we get to more of the news, just something I was thinking about when I was sitting in a ground blind all weekend trying to hunt for critters, and how weird and diabolical my mind is I'm just thinking about what the Patriots do it for. I'm not even a Patriots fan. I shouldn't even really care. But it's just – if they're going to go offensive line – and it's really not just – it's also a discussion about – it's the discussion about the top three guys, right? And if they're going offensive line, could they go Mimbu, who I'm starting to think is the best in the whole class?
I mean, I don't think it's out of the question. But I don't think that's the direction they'll go, just given kind of what was spoken about Morgan Moses, who was brought in there to play right tackle. Elliot Wolf said last week, Morgan Moses has been a right tackle since the moment he was drafted. He'll be a right tackle. Like, that's just what he plays. I know they signed him on just a one-year deal, so it's like, all right, well, if Mambu's there, right? But here's the thing. They pick at four, and nobody in front of them is going to take a tackle. So they kind of just had their choice. And you'd have thought if Mambu was their pick, they probably don't go out and sign a pure right tackle when Mambu is a pure right tackle. That's kind of where my train of thought goes. So when I went through my mock on Friday, it was, for me, it was like, well, Travis Hunter's here. Travis Hunter makes the most sense given the contract to Carlton Davis, given these different and the contract to Milton Williams to play defensive line. Carlton Davis is a cornerback formerly of Tampa. And I think he was in Detroit for 1 year. Both guys got good contracts. Respectable enough to where you're like, all right, they maybe don't press that button that early.
No.
Travis Hunter or, to me, tackle. You bring up Mambu, right tackle. Again, that's where I X that out. My brain goes, okay, well, this is purely a Travis Hunter play, or the draft is the flat circle and Kelvin Banks comes right back around to play left tackle here, because a lot of people continue to beat this Will Campbell drum. Will Campbell, left tackle or left guard. He played left tackle at LSU. Short arms, historically short arms, sub 33 inches. Everything's smaller with him. Whereas Banks, he's got the third longest wingspan in the draft class offensive line.
After all people could talk about all seasons, how short you would think this guy has T-Rex arms. He comes in and he's got the third biggest. It's just third biggest him.
Wingspan, yeah. And it's like, and the thing is with the Banks and the Campbell conversation was they both came into the cycle, which would be considered, I guess, last August, as the consensus top two tackles. Now, Mambu had a great season. I get it. He's a right tackle, road grader, things of that nature. But Banks and Campbell have been the top two dogs. And then right the last 2 months, it's been like, well, they're both going to have super short arms. They're both going to play guard. And then we talked to Kelvin Banks, and Banks is like, yeah, I've talked to like 19 teams, and only six have talked about playing guard.
Even mentioned it,
right? And everybody in the media is pushing the Will Campbell narrative. Personally, with the New England Patriots, I'm down to two guys. When we get that, you know, if Mike Mann does the cheat sheet for the draft, I think there'll be two names on that list. In reality, like, there might be Mason Graham might be on that list because if they need D tackle, but I think in reality that it should be Travis Hunter or Kelvin Banks. That's where I'm at with the New England Patriots. I 100% agree with you that Mambu would fit the mold, fit the system, fit the need. But the Morgan Moses move, which, again, we're talking about like a 36-year-old, 37-year-old right tackle, but they paid him to come play right tackle.
Well, I have two questions.
Picked fourth overall with nobody in front of him that's going to take a tackle.
So, we talked about Will Campbell. He's he was widely considered kind of the offensive tackle one coming into the process. He's out of LSU. But the short arm allegations against him actually did come to fruition. I believe only one, is it Luke Goedeke, is the only starting offensive tackle in the league right now that has arms as short as as Will Campbell. And so it's, I mean, there's somebody, there's one out of 64 who can do it, but it's not a lot. And it's one of those things that really does kind of start to concern you the same way that it's like Luther Burden having 8.5-inch hands. It's like at a certain point, it's got to become, you know, it's got to be more than a talking point. It actually becomes an actual kind of concern for you, right? As far as these measurables. But Vrabel did, you know, he took Skoronski, who everybody said his arms were too short. I guess he plays guard now. And then the other thing is how do you think that, how far can Will Campbell possibly slide? And do you still think Mimbo can just play left? His feet are really good.
I would lean on your expertise for that. Like, I can evaluate him for what I can evaluate him for, but if you cross positionally, right tackle to left tackle to right, like, I would lean on a guy like you or Brandon Thorne for that information.
Well, I mean, some people say it's really hard. Some people say it's super hard, and then some people say it's just like, you know, it's like try wiping with your other hand. It's just, it feels a little weird at first, but if you do it every day, you know, you probably get used to it. He looks like a really good right tackle. I love watching him play. I would love to keep him at right tackle, but you know, the Titans, I guess Vrabel wasn't there, but the Titans took J.C. Latham and he played right in college. And it's like, we've seen teams take guys that played right in college and put them over at left. I guess they're moving Latham back to right though this year. Let's see. You have some news coming in from Jordan Schultz, who I guess is not busy fighting with Ian Rappaport and Starbucks right now. Jordan Schultz, Arizona wide receiver and projected top pick. Ted McMillan has pro day today, where scouts and attendance clocked him at a 4.4840. What do we have in projected for four? I mean, we're going to manually adjust that, right, to 4.53.
Yep.
If that number sticks, where do we have him projected?
4.52.
we're good at this, man. We're good at this.
First thoughts, though, because Ted hadn't tested at the combine, and then this came out 7 minutes ago. So first thoughts as far as the tech conversation goes into these wide receivers. We don't have to jump all the way into the wide receiver conversation, but just came out, so might as well react to it. What's kind of your first thoughts when you see that number? Right there at 4.5. I mean, it's to me, it's fast enough, right?
Yes. What he looks like. Yes, I mean, we're just like, you know, Ted McMillan. So 6'4", 219.
Flat Stanley.
What does that mean?
that's what I called him at the combine, because I go up and look at him. He's kind of got like a big wide surface area, kind of like a running back that runs upside upright, right?
Yeah.
His chest is really wide shoulders.
He's got the Drake London stuff, but like you and I said, man, there it's like
not quite Mike Evans.
Whenever you get him next to him, he feels less like a London and more like a Christian Watson.
Yes, there you go.
Yep. As far as the way that his body type is, 10-inch hands and a pro day adjusted 4.5340. If that holds up, we have this. I wanted to talk to you about this. Maybe we can just kind of talk about do you have anything on Ted? You've been lower on him than consensus. I have him as my kind of a 1A or 1B type of guy. I think I'm sticking with Matthew Golden as my wide receiver one at this point.
I mean, I still think he's a first round receiver. I just don't see the, I don't, everyone's pushing. I mean, there's still today, or in the last couple of days, been conversations about Tet being that fourth or fifth overall pick to the Patriots and to the Jags, which I think is rather cockamamie. Like, I think if a team like either one of those teams spends that draft capital on Tet McMillan, it's a mistake. I don't think he's to the level of T. Higgins as a prospect. I don't think he's to the level of T. Higgins as a player. T. Higgins just got paid the seventh most money at wide receiver, the highest paid number two in the league. I don't think he's a true number one. Like, I think a lot of people, I've had this conversation with Nate Liss a ton. It's like, you go somewhere else. If Higgins goes somewhere else, he's the number one, but he's not a dynamo number one. Like, he doesn't control a game like a Jamar Chase does on a week in and week out basis, or Justin Jefferson does on a week in and week out basis. And a lot of people kick back on me and they're like, oh, you're so wrong. And I'm just like, it's the type of player he is. He's not, you know, he's not this game-breaking Chaser Jefferson. He's not a PPR monster who's going to just control and get targeted a billion times like, you know, the Wes Welkers, Puka Nacua's, Cooper Kupps. He's not a Randy Moss type. He's not a Kelvin Johnson type. He's just not any of that, which is what I look for in an alpha, right? An outside wide receiver. I think he's a really good number two. I'm not spending that draft capital, fourth to fifth overall, on a Tet McMillan. I'm not spending it on any of these guys in this class other than Travis Hunter. I think Tet belongs in the first round, but he's not a, you know, push your chips into the middle and do it. There's a couple other guys in this class. I just prefer their archetype, body type, abilities, talents, hands, different things like that.
All right. We're going to, soon at Roster Watch, we're going to be releasing our staff rookie rankings that have linked all of our profiles and stuff as we kind of, you know, as we're trying to give you guys more access to this, and as we're actually getting our rankings a little bit better formulated, if Trashman will ever put his in, geez. But, you know, clearly as we do the profiles, these things change a little bit as we kind of learn more about them and stuff. But I mean, as of now, we've been to the combine, we've been to all the bowl games, you know, we have the pro days coming up. There's only a couple pieces of these profiles left that we really need to get to. For me, it's just like, with some of the running backs, I really just need to grind through a little bit more of the film on them just to make sure that I'm exactly right about some of these guys. We had the Travion Quinshon discussion on one of the days last week. By the way, we're here every day now, noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. So make sure and continue to tune in. And if you guys could, please remember to like the show and subscribe to the channel. It really does. I know it's just clicking a button or leaving a comment or something like that. It takes you guys 2 seconds, but the amount that it helps us is like in no way commiserate with that. It's like your one little click helps us like 1 million X what you would think. It's like the algorithm really, really cares about that. So please like the show, subscribe to the channel, and that will be what allows us to continue doing this every single day and hanging out with you guys. Thanks so much to everybody for being here in the chat as well. Kip C, Terminal Sarcasm, Jamie Brog, Harry Snowman, all you guys, man. Thank you all so much for being here. We'll be putting out the sheet here sooner or later. And when we do, I'm going to have to go through and update all the prospect profiles too, because Cody puts all of his grades in there and now I got to go and edit them because a lot of these grades have changed. Let's just go into some of these. Luther Burden, you had him starting out. You had a comp of Terry McLaurin, and you had a top 10 grade on Luther Burden. I'm sure that's changed.
Yeah. Well, with the results that came back as far as the hand size and the testing, he gets bumped down a little bit, and I haven't plugged everything back in. So if I plug it back in, it drops him from a 6.65 to a 6.59, and that drops him out of the top 10 conversation down to just – a likely first round conversation. So more of a boom bust prospect. So it bumps him out of the top 10 conversation. And the other player I had as a top 10 was, who else was the other one? Travis Hunter, who stays as a top 10 pick. Like that's just Travis. To me, Travis Hunter, the two guys I had as top 10 picks was Burden and him. I love the archetype of Burden. I've talked about it on multiple shows. It fits the Jamar Chase, the DJ Moore, the Stephon Diggs, Jefferson, all these different things that I love and I look for in an alpha receiver, especially for fantasy football and PPR. And Burden just comes in and he kind of neutered himself with the small hands. He could have, you know, at least done some band work and stretched them things out, but a little underwhelming. And so he bumps down just a touch, but it's still a first round pick for me. And there's people that don't think he'll go in the first round, which I think is wrong.
Well, do you think at this point, Emeka Ibuka still goes in the first round?
I do. I still think Emeka Ibuka does. I know we're still waiting on testing for him. He's going to have his pro day next Tuesday, the 25th. So we'll see what happens there. But I still think Emeka Ibuka to this day is a first round pick.
you originally, before this whole process started, you had Matthew Golden with a second round draft grade. Have you, I'm guessing you bumped that up to first.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, if I update the athleticism, he goes from a 6'5'8 to a 6'6'4, which 6'5'8 takes him out of that range into a 6'6'4, which brings him up closer to that top 10 overall pick. So he kind of swaps with Luther Burden. And I'll be honest with you, like the film analysis on Golden that I did was pre-playoff. So that was, of course, when he blew up, was down the during the playoffs. And you know,
he started kind of blowing up a little bit before the playoffs.
Yeah, that, yeah, again, 100%. But I also think I had I try not to have like an inherent bias on some guys, and he's one that's tough. Like any guy from Texas or somebody that I've watched close throughout the entire year. And when I say inherent bias, it's not because I like have a favoritism or anything. It's because Alex and I do a show for Orange Bloods, and we cover Texas and watch Texas every single week, much more closer than we do these other guys throughout the entire season. So it's just some natural, like I've used to seeing this guy play, blah, blah, blah. You have to kind of pull back a little bit. And so that's where I was. I thought, remember at that time we talked about it, I did the write-up on him, and we came on here and we talked about it, and I think we both thought, God, that's a little high. It's a little high. And then he goes on that tear, then he runs the 4.29. It's like, all right, well, this thing is completely erupted.
I still can't believe he ran 4.29.
Isn't that wild? Just completely erupted. And
yeah. All right. So then just a couple others that I'm kind of Jalen Noel. Let's just talk about both the Iowa State guys. You have both Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins prior to the Senior Bowl when these write-ups went up.
Yeah.
You had both these guys as fourth round projections.
Yeah. So I'm just plugging in Noel's athleticism right now, which I'm behind on this. I haven't done all these yet, but I'm updating their athleticism and their.
But you also with Higgins, you also got to update just his like. I would update my evaluation on both Higgins and Noel after seeing him there at the Senior Bowl. You know what
I'll say this. So that's part of like, I'm going to have to like go back and rewatch stuff and reanalyze, because the way I grade these guys, just to kind of give a behind the curtain kind of type of view, like I have a grade that's plugged in that goes through my little algorithm that's based on my eyes. But then I also have like all these different things for right route tempo, route leverage, release package, ball tracking, vertical threat, separation, yards after catch, blocking, all these different things, plus testing. So it's kind of like that. That's how the number comes out and projects the round. But so I'm gonna have to play with that.
What do you have Noel's number as far as route separation?
Let's see here. Noel, I have for route separation as a 5.5 out of 8.
Oh, dude, you got to get that up.
It was like a 7 out of 10. Seven. What is that, like a 7.5 out of 10?
I think he's a dirty separator, dude. I'd have that at least. Dude, you got to have that at 6.5. That's bad to have it at 5.5.
All right.
Yeah, dude.
I'll bump that up.
Yeah, so that'll get him up maybe just a little smidge.
So if I bump that up and I put his athleticism in, that bumps him up to a 6.24, which is late second.
I could see that. I think Noel and Higgins are probably, you're going to have to bump them both up, I think, because both are going day two.
Yeah.
Okay. And then just a couple others I wanted to ask about.
Jalen Royals needs to come down.
Jalen Royals. Yeah. He's not.
Well, he's also been injured through this whole process. So I just really wonder what he really even is. Like, we saw a lot of it on tape, but he's been banged up. Everything we've heard is he was banged up at the Senior Bowl. He's banged up at the Combine. He does well at the Combine. It's like, I don't even know if I know really what he truly is, but I definitely had him graded a little high.
It looks like you had Ricky White originally graded from UNLV, graded as a third rounder. And it's just like, there's no way, right?
Because
he can't, dude. He came in and blazed a 4.61.
Not, you see the projection not, right next to him, right?
Not that that's disqualifying, but I it's not. This
look
is
at my projection for him. It was 4.45. It's not even close.
Yeah, so I know. And this is a dude who, like, you even projected from a play style comp is like a Dante Pettis. I thought he was faster. I'm like, this guy, he kind of reminds me of Marcus Wheaton. And that's just a – now that's a bad comp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that one's going to need to change too. But
if I update just his speed, and I haven't went through and – like, I have all my, like, Shrine Bowl notes, Senior Bowl notes, which, again, I know those were in the past, but I have to still input those into the computer. They're all on paper. If I just input the athleticism update with Ricky White, it brings him down to a 605. 605 is a fourth-round pick.
Are you taking Ricky White in the fourth round?
Of the NFL draft?
Yes.
In this class with these receivers? I think about it.
I mean, there's a bunch of these dudes I think that I would rather have over him. All right, and then the only other one, the final one, is just Savion Williams from TCU. It's like in kind of an enigmatic profile. It's hard to figure out exactly what you're going to get out of him. You had a second-round grade on him. Originally, the comps we had for him were just very similar kind of enigmatic players, and like Laviska Shenault, Cordero Patterson. What are you going to do? How are you going to play with them? How are you going to deploy them? What are you going to have him play? You know, he never shows up for the Senior Bowl, so we don't have any verified sort of eyeball test stuff on him. But we do have, I guess, the 4.48. 4.48 40. What does that put his speed score at? What's the percentile speed score there? It's got to be pretty high.
See, it's at 96th percentile according to playerprofiler.com.
Best comparable over there is Cedric Tillman. That's interesting.
God, look at that hit. Look at that headshot. it's like a poop emoji.
Yeah, man. It's an interesting hairstyle there for Savion. What do you think? Do you still think he goes second round by some team saying, man, we're just too intrigued by this dude. He's too big. He's too fast.
Yeah, man. I think with some of these guys that have the athletic profiles, especially like Savion Williams does, and I know he's a bit tall, listed 6'4". I think that's what he came in at for the combine was 6.036, 228. I know that there's this cross positional thing where you think of like Antonio Gibson, Cordero Patterson. I think if the right coach drafts him for fantasy football purposes, he can have a sick value for us. Right now, I'm kind of a toss up in the fantasy football circles, but in the NFL, I just want the athlete, man. And Savion Williams is one of the best athletes in the class from a pound for pound perspective. So I love me some Savion Williams, regardless of the position.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.